Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the AR Library Call, EMSW Call, and EMS Online Call. And today we have a boatload of questions because I've been gone. It is the 2nd of June, 2014. Again, I apologize for my absence, but a great trip to Israel. So someday maybe I can share some information about that. First question, compartmentalization. I don't understand how my husband could think that oral sex with other people wasn't a big deal. I'm reading about his ability to compartmentalize, which makes cheating easier and more likely. How can he learn how not to compartmentalize his lifelong feelings now? I've forgiven him, and we are joyful, but I can't imagine oral sex in our future at this point. So it seems like there are kind of two situations there. It's interesting. Typically, women do not look at compartmentalization the same way. Women in an affair are far more often not to make a delineation between oral sex and intercourse. They're far more willing to go all the way. Men, on the other hand, play a game that I call, and it is a game in their compartmentalization, I call venial sin versus mortal sin. A venial sin is something that's not quite so bad. A mortal sin is something that's really bad. So they give themselves permission for doing something like oral sex, but they're not going to totally be unfaithful by having intercourse. However, if for some reason they have now done EMS online or the EMS weekend, I can almost promise you they no longer see a difference between oral sex and intercourse. In fact, that little myth is exploded usually afterwards, and again, they no longer see a difference. Your last comment was, I forgive him and we're joyous now, but I can't imagine oral sex in our future at this point. And that's certainly understandable. What I have noticed for couples, however, is they go through this process. Typically over time, there really is healing in that particular area. And part of it's just a determination not to allow something like this to rob you of the fullness of what you can have as a couple, even though it usually takes time for those intrusive thoughts to go away. And it needs to be in your timetable. And I would hope that you'll heal to the place to where those intrusive thoughts aren't there any longer. But I certainly think you're normal at this point, and I would just give it time. Second question, lengthy emotional and sexual affairs. I'm worried that the length of my partner's affairs will decrease my chances of healing and increase his chances of relapse. We've been married for 16 years, and he has been cheating for 11 of those years. Excuse me, I'm trying to turn this off so I don't get any more. There. Let me start over there. I'm worried that the length of my partner's affairs will decrease my chances of healing and increase his chances of relapse. We've been married for 16 years, and he has been cheating for 11. I can't seem to find material in the recovery library to address this concern. His affair primarily consists of a 7-year emotional and sexual affair, then a 4-year emotional and sexual affair. How do these durations impact our recovery? By the way, that is a great question. Thank you for pointing that out. It's not a matter so much of decreasing your chances of healing, or even increasing his chances of relapse. Here's the difficulty. It does increase your time of healing. The longer someone has been unfaithful, the more history that is involved. For instance, if somebody has a one-night stand, that's for that person, it's as bad as it gets in terms of the pain. There's no difference in the pain factor. However, they have maybe a five-hour period or a 24-hour period or a five-day period to work through. So it doesn't rewrite all of their history. For someone whose mate has been unfaithful for 11 years, that's 11 years of history to ultimately work through. And so there's so many emotional consequences or pieces in that timeline that can come back, and you're going, oh my gosh, well, I was doing this, or we were doing this, you were doing that. And every time those consequences come through, it's another consequence that you ultimately have to work through. So it creates a difficult situation for you. But typically after someone has worked through all of those triggers and those reminders, again, it may take longer than 12 months. You may be working through things for 18 months, but usually people do get to the other side and the power of those consequences begin to end. It's incredibly helpful if your mate is patient as you work through those processes, simply because he's created so much time that you have to work through in that timeline. In terms of his own recovery, whether it's a sexual addiction, multiple affairs, it's the same is true for him. Maybe not working through, but as long as he does what's necessary to begin to take care of himself and recognize that if he's done this once, when probably even after the first time he swore he would never do it again, on your wedding day he swore he'd never do it again, he's got to accept the fact that he can do it again. And he can say he won't and still end up in that place. So if he recognizes that weakness and works a good program, figures out what he needs to do to stay safe, he should be able to recover. I just think that your journey of recovery is much longer simply because of the history that you have to work through. Oh, and in addition to that, an additional piece of information which may pertain to our situation. The first affair began before we got married and continued through the first 6 years of marriage. I don't know how that may affect your answer. Well, so there was a period that it happened, obviously, for 6 years. I don't know when it actually picked up again the second time around. I would suspect that maybe from six years to maybe 10 years, so 4 years he wasn't acting out. I'm not sure. However, when someone is unfaithful prior to the relationship, if it's not addressed, it just increases the probability that they'll be unfaithful again if they don't do what's necessary to address their issue. And it certainly sounds like that's the situation that he found himself in. So I believe it's important in a situation like that that he look at his pattern and figure out, understand that good intentions don't work here. He's going to have to do whatever he needs to do for the remainder of his life with you and the remainder of his life. He's got to accept who he is and make sure he does what's necessary to stay safe. Next, I read your article about hiding in denial. I feel that since I cannot completely believe my husband and anything he tells me as the absolute truth, and a polygraph is out of the question for him, I need someone to help me understand my own illusions about what has happened and get past the denial I'm in. I feel that so much more happened that he is than he is telling me, because I cannot reconcile his actions with his words. His actions at confrontation were so extreme compared to what he says actually happened in his latest emotional affair. What he says happened did not warrant the horrible aftermath of the confrontation, which still goes on 17 months later. I think I need a mentor to help me get past the illusions of what I believe happened and what he says happened. I know now that I will never get the real truth, but I'm having trouble accepting that until I do. I can't move on from the horrible limbo in which I'm stuck. 17 months is too long to live this way, and I feel myself getting farther away emotionally. Would you be able to make some suggestions for a mentor? I've been through Harboring Hope, EMSW, personal counseling, couples counseling. All the therapists want to do is start from this point and move forward without addressing the past. I can't do that. I have to understand the past and all the things that happened before I can move forward. I have to feel safe. So any suggestions for mentoring you might give will be welcome. You know, one of the situations I would say, I don't know that anybody can ever get all the information of what's happened in the past. Sometimes the best you can do is get a good picture of maybe what overall, in the overarching piece, what it looked like. I would suggest potentially going to the library, looking at the articles on disclosure, because ultimately it kind of talks, or it does talk a little bit about the pieces that are important. I do know, too, that there's times that couples cannot get on the same page, and that's really difficult, because it's until you see it the same way, it's kind of hard to know how to go forward, and I think that's a bit of an ongoing conversation. I know this isn't your question, but one more thing you might want to talk to your mate about, if he's willing to talk, which could be helpful, is asking questions around what it was not. If you can't understand what it was, his being able to talk about what it was not may be able to be helpful. I also agree, at some point you have to make a decision that you know what you know, you may not understand it, but you do have to release the discovery piece, because you can never get on fully to the release piece and moving forward if you can't just accept kind of what you do know and just pray that ultimately it'll begin to make more sense to you, because obviously it doesn't make sense. If you've gone through the Harboring Hope, now to the mentor, one of the things you might consider is talking to your group leader and see if they would even serve or talk to you some and help with mentoring. If you know anybody else who has gone through this that you can meet with, that's also helpful, not just gone through it, but is on the other side and has dealt with all of this well. Potentially, even if someone in your Harboring Hope group is doing really well, or somebody in your EMSW group, or maybe even your group leader for EMSW, all of those are possibilities for someone you potentially could talk to, and maybe they could help you stay grounded. They could help you be able to let go so you can begin to move forward. I remember one of our mentors saying once, you know, I finally had to accept the fact that, and he was the one that was betrayed, that she was never going to fully understand what she had done to me. Not to the level that I wanted. But even more, I had to come to accept the fact that we were never going to see this the same. And I didn't think she was ultimately trying to lie to me, but her viewpoint and my viewpoint were so radically different. And until I could sit there and say, okay, it is what it is, I don't fully understand it, but I want a life, and I want to begin to move forward. If you'll remember, one of the definitions of forgiveness is giving up all hope of ever having a better past. And hopefully, maybe it's also giving up the ability to ever fully understand what happened, or to even agree ultimately on what happened. Similarities make this process very hard. I know that if you were to do the things he did, that it probably would look radically different. And I suspect that one reality makes it very hard, because it will not make sense to some extent, and you're still trying to get your mind around it, and maybe you have to accept that you can't, but a mentor would help, and those would be the first places I would look. Next, fantasy sex god. Fantasy sex god, Rick. In week 2 of EMSO, we learned the following things. Men who have affairs often don't value their marriage or their family as highly as their wives do. The goal should not be about how the other person makes me feel about myself. Ask the unfaithful spouse, how were you different in the other relationship with the AP? By the way, for the sake of recognizing that they have the power to be how they want to be in their marriage. But anyway, the broken spouse may have already lost all of her self-esteem and self-respect by this point. She has been undervalued, humiliated, and disrespected. She has been holding together the frayed edges of a sham family life and pretending everything is okay. She's been taking care of the house, the kids, the finances, and the full-time job. She has to act like nothing happened at church, at work, at home. Where is she supposed to find the energy or desire to make her straying husband feel like the fantasy god that he was with the AP? Why is the underinvested spouse rewarded for the suffering he has inflicted on the hurt spouse? Isn't this exaggerated fantasy of pretending normal that will squeeze the last ounce out of the hurt spouse? Okay, let me kind of take this piece by piece, because I don't know that I'm communicating well, that you've understood exactly what I'm trying to say. Number 3, for instance, ask the unfaithful spouse how they were different. I don't remember specifically stating that you asked the unfaithful spouse how they were different in the relationship with the AP. I believe that was aimed at the unfaithful spouse looking at themselves and recognizing they're not a victim, that they could have been a different person. They could have been who they were in the relationship, but it's their responsibility to be real and authentic in their marriage. And so if they feel they're being different, then they need to look at who they are, and if that's how they want to be, they need to decide to be different within the marriage, not blame their mate for their inability to feel or be authentic in the relationship. Second, I understand that you feel undervalued and disrespected while you've been holding things together. At the same time, there's a place of pride where you can say, you know, I've done the right thing. I've really invested in what's important. Now it's his turn to pick up the ball so that I don't have to. I've done my role. It's his turn to start washing the dishes. It's his turn to begin doing things. He needs to pick the ball up here because he has been underinvested. The last sentence of that paragraph, I don't know that I fully agree with. She has to act like nothing happened at church, at work, at home. I don't understand that. Part of me would say, you need to be real. You may decide that there's a limited number of people that you want to talk to, but I don't know that I would say you have to act like nothing happened. I think you can act like you're really hurt, and when people ask, say thank you, but right now, this, you know, our marriage, really, the things going on with me are personal, but you can pray for us. I think it would be really hard to have to pretend normal for you. The next question, where is she supposed to find the energy or desire to make her straying husband feel like the fantasy sex god that he was with the AP? Again, back to my first answer. I don't think it's your responsibility to do that at all. I think it's his responsibility. He picks the ball up here to love you. You do not need to change how you are. He needs to be helping you heal. You don't need to be trying to compete with the AP or being the fantasy that he thinks he wants. He's got to get to the place where he loves and accepts you as you are. That is not your responsibility in any way. Two, why is the underinvested spouse rewarded for the suffering he's inflicted upon the hurt spouse? I don't know how he's rewarded. Ultimately, he needs to be becoming the invested spouse while you heal so that you've got the ability to take a vacation and heal. I don't know how he would be rewarded. I just think he needs to take responsibility and begin to shift and grow up and be a real person. Isn't this an exaggerated fantasy of pretend normal that would squeeze the last ounce of life out of a hurt spouse? If that's the way you go about it, where you have to pretend to be something you're not, I would agree it would kill you. I just don't think that's the way you should go about it. I think the way you go about it is what I suggested. You need to be able to take a break. He needs to be able to help you heal. You certainly don't need to become ultimately what he wants. He just needs to become who he really is with you and to be authentic. And he needs to be able to try and accept you as you really are and take responsibility for your healing. Hopefully that will help a little bit as you try to go forward. And I just want to read something somebody responded to on this question. I've heard Rick say many times that the betrayed spouse is not supposed to try to compete with EAP. The relationship with EAP is not love. A very tiny percentage of the betrayers end up with EAP at the end of the day. The relationship with EAP is fantasy. I think this person's saying things well. As to men who have affairs, they often don't value their marriage or their family as highly as their wives do. I thought it was opposite, that when women are unfaithful in the majority of cases, they have already checked out of the relationship. When men stray, they can still love their wives and compartmentalize the affair. I still can't grasp this concept, but that is what our counselors worked with us to understand. Also, Rick says the purpose of marriage is not to meet your spouse's need. The purpose of marriage is to grow you to maturity, the mature you. Ironically, it's only when you realize that the spouse can't or won't meet your needs that you can know that you can truly love him. It's not because he meets your needs, but in spite of it. You just love him and just do what is unconditional love. I have felt the way you seem to feel. Your last three questions indicate, if you are a week or two in, I can understand how hurt you feel and overwhelmed with all of this. As you proceed through the course, I think you'll find a better understanding of the roles and the relationship and how to heal. If you haven't signed up for Hope for Healing or Harboring Hope, I would highly recommend it. The support from other women saved me. They were my safety net through this very, very hard journey. So right below that, it says under Fantasy Gone, please note the three sentences and the quotes above were taken directly from the EMSO. I will go back and check that. Hopefully, what I just said will answer your questions. We are stuck. Next question. In trying to discuss the items in week two of EMSO, my husband and I have gone completely backwards in our communication. Before, it felt like we were reconnecting and enjoying each other. In attempting to discuss empathy and remorse, we've fallen into a fighting pattern. My husband says he doesn't believe that I need to know that he understands my pain. He simply says that it is in the past and he can't change it. I'm left with the option of either expressing my pain to him without any understanding or stuffing it down inside myself to deal with it alone. It's also interesting, through the same time, he wants me to understand how hard it was for him being in an affair. I've read every article I can on how the unfaithful spouse has felt. I have voluntarily expressed to him I understand how the relationship developed and became what it was. I understand the stress he felt while covering up his affair. I even ask him to explain the good qualities of his AP to me because he feels that the EMSO course is painting her into negative light. I struggle and I'm hacking right now. How can I continue when an expectation is one-sided? The good news to me is if you're in an EMSO course, for some reason I thought it said you're in week two. The one thing I think that would happen over time is you get to week four, five, six, it's really going to make a lot more sense to your husband. It's important in the sense that when he sees the other people beginning to understand what's going on and how it's affecting the other people, it's going to shift his lens that he sees you through. He's going to see that he's the one that's abnormal, not everyone else. So in that sense, I think it'll be incredibly helpful for him. The group process in particular, as he begins to understand more about empathy. So I would just be patient at this point. I certainly think you're working probably a little too hard. I mean, I appreciate your kindness and your empathy toward him. I think that you're trying to set a good example, but be patient. You're only in week two, and really this doesn't begin to pick up at least his understanding of how he's impacted you till week four. Next question. My husband and I attended EMS in March after discovery of a three-year emotional affair. While there, Rick helped my husband to realize he was an adult child of an alcoholic. Obviously, it was a little encouraging as it does explain some of what we were going through. Our problem is he has to heal from being an adult child of an alcoholic. But as with most ACOA kids, going through the pain of the ACOA recovery keeps him in limbo. With him being in limbo with his recovery, it seems it keeps us in limbo. So what do I do? While my head understands it, it just breaks my heart again and again as our recovery gets to wait again. The second problem is he does not want to and has decided the weekly calls from the EMS are too painful. So regretfully, hurt and bitterly, we're not making the weekly phone calls. I am reading all I can on ACOA, listening to Mike Wells almost daily. My relationship with God is deepening, and I'm trying to listen to the shepherd, not the butcher. I want God's glory in all of this mess. Thank you for all you're doing for so many and have done for us. Many blessings to you and yours. So one of the things I would add to this, first off, I would say that working on the infidelity first is even more important in terms of priority than working on his being an adult child of an alcoholic or being a victim of some sort. In reality, both are important and both can be done simultaneously, but your healing and his concern for your healing really should, I believe, be first priority with the work at being the adult child of the alcoholic second. When I've had other people in this situation, the main thing is to protect the marriage, not to continue doing the individual work, even though there may be some individual work necessary to keep the marriage in place. But his first responsibility is to help you heal, as far as I'm concerned, and saying that he doesn't have to work on the marriage until he gets this out of the way, to me, is just mistaken. It's misguided. And certainly if he got that impression from me, I feel horrible about that. The telephone calls are important. One of the things I would suggest is if he won't get on the calls, you get on the calls without him. And if he has questions about priorities, I would suggest you ask him to give me a call, or he can post his own questions on here, and I would gladly respond to him. And it looks like he go on here. I would like to add that while we were at EMS, My husband felt some of the exercises where we were, the exercises we were to do and speak in front of other couples did not really pertain to us. He said our situation is different. He would say our situation is different because the affair and AP are not the problem. They are a symptom to our problem. I told him, I told you that I loved you, but not in love with you, and that I realize after being married 3 years that we should not have gotten married. All the activities and conversations, as he was concerned, were of no use to us and somehow different, and that I was just supposed to say, oh yeah, we don't fit into this group, we don't need to do this or talk about it or just move on. Suck it up, girl, that is all I have to give. Leave her, take it or leave it, was the message I got. I'm confident he would leave if he were not bound by what he feels deemed by God and also does not want our kids in different homes. I discovered his feelings about 9 years ago when I sensed his attraction to the AP, at which time he confessed that he was not in love with me and that, but that he loved me. At that time, he denied anything with the AP. So for 9 years, I've been living with the I love you but not in love with you life. Discovery was this past September with the married person, and I sensed that attraction to her. And he says it was emotional and had been going on for 3.5 years, like that's something, okay? Not the 9 that I felt was going on. I do not believe it. What does God say about divorce for emotional affairs / adultery? So I would say in a situation like that, first off, all of that to me is wildly distorted. You were no different. He's no different. My first thought in responding to that is there's a complete lack of true honesty about what or what hasn't happened. Certainly denial on his part, but my hunch would be potentially that not all the truth has yet come out. And as long as the truth doesn't have come out, he's got to maintain his defense mechanisms, and is going to have trouble honestly looking at himself and looking at what's happened in the marriage and what he's done in the marriage. And that's the problem with holding on to ongoing secrets. Don't know if that's true or not. That would be my first guess, because there's still an avoidance of looking at this, which means he's still having to justify, which most likely means he still hasn't told everything. Again, don't know if that's true, but certainly in a situation like that, that would be my first hunch, and certainly would disagree that y'all are different. And even the whole piece of 3 years in, knew he had married the wrong person, the real question isn't whether you're the wrong person. The real question is whether I'm being the right person. So it's, again, it's a wrong focus in a way of justification. So if somebody continues using justifications, that creates a problem for me. What does God say about divorce? For emotional affairs and adultery, there is a book by a guy named David Einstone Brewer, Divorce and Remarriage in the Bible or Divorce and Remarriage in the Church. For an answer to that, I would highly recommend reading that book. I think the guy did an excellent job of going through clearly what Scripture says about all of that, and I think it would give you some strong direction. Next, Rick, our EMSO group has been sharing resources regarding audiobooks on our small group wall. A few have recommended to each other, a few that have been recommended are Shirley Glass, Not Just Friends, Brené Brown, Men and Women and Vulnerability, Harville Hendrix, Getting the Love You Want, Gary Chapman, The Five Love Languages. I'm interested in John Gottman's work also. However, he's written over 35 books, and I'm not sure where to start. Which of his books do you think would be most helpful to a fair recovery and marriage building situations? So honestly, While I have studied a lot of John Gottman, I have not read a lot of his books. I think I read one. I think it's Seven Deadly Habits. I'm not sure that that's the best one. But I would also say that some of those are really good. The one out of the books you listed that I think is best is Sherry Glass's book, Not Just Friends. And I think that some of the stuff with John Gottman is good, but you've got to understand John Gottman's book is about more or is more focused on repairing the marriage rather than getting through infidelity. So one of my concerns when people begin reading materials is they begin focusing on things that are important, but things that do not need to be the focus at this point in time. Right now, what needs to be the primary focus to me is healing from the infidelity. And if what you do is begin focusing on how to repair the marriage, you skip over healing the breach that happened in the marriage. When you start reading books like you're talking about here, or even Boundaries in Marriage by Townsend and Cloud, which is another great book, those are marriages that need to be done, or books that need to be done more in the Married for Life course if you want to do some reading after the EMS O course is finished. So while those are all really good resources, other than the one listed by Shirley Glass, I'm not sure you're going to find them really focused on what needs to be focused on at this point. I think your energy needs to be put back into what's happening in the group. And if you want additional information, again, listen to Shirley Glass. So that is the end of all of our questions, 40 minutes into the call. Great questions today. I want to thank everybody for joining in, and I hope everybody has a great week. I look forward to talking to you again next week. To healing.